coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Welcome to our weekly survey of the Bible lessons for each Sunday of the church year with me, Jamie Krieger, David Weber, and Ethan Stoppenhagen. On today's episode, we will look at the lessons for the sixth Sunday of Easter, and they are Acts 16 verses 9 to 15, Psalm 67, Revelation 21 verses 9 to 14, and 21 to 27, and the Gospel according to John, the 5th chapter, verses 1 to 9. We begin with David Weber and the Gospel lesson.
Ethan, I see at the heart of this passage a question that Jesus asked, "Do you want to be healed?" For 38 years, the man had suffered his lack of health. Why would Jesus ask an obvious question to someone who is for these years been frustrated from his chance to actually be healed?
The only reason I can think of is that he might not have actually wanted it.
Oh, so what possibly could be a reason not to want to be healed? I'll tell you. All right, so here's I'm going to have to work my way through it because I just could not shake, I couldn't shake the idea that this is what the passage, this is the door that opens up the whole passage. And the first thing I noticed is that when Jesus talks about the gospel, the good news, he uses several different ways of understanding it, because we as Lutherans are used to saying the good news is a legal judgment that we were once guilty and now through forgiveness we're not guilty, which tends to sometimes be a pretty dry theory. But when the gospel is promising a healing to those who are ill, that's very thick and existential, right? A person who is sick wants to be healed, right? There's no doubt about it. A person who may or may not feel guilt may not be all that infatuated with a legal judgment that isn't really experienced until the end of time and all that. I'm making the contrast. What do you think? That does this passage somehow get at the meaning of what the good news of the gospel is? And as you suggest, that good news might not be heard by him as good news. That's why Jesus is asking, do you want to be healed? Does the promise of healing sound like good news, or is it something that you could do without? What do you think?
Well, I think it's good news, but it's scary good news, because what it implies is that you have to start all over. And that's what this man would be doing after 38 years. 38 years he's been sitting here at Bethesda, and to be healed would mean you could look at it practically, he's going to have to get a job, find a place to live, try to find some family that might still be living. But in the end, in one hand, it's a completely new life. But I wonder if there's even an aspect of discipleship at play here, where he would feel indebted to Jesus or would feel obligated to do something for him. I don't know. But there's a lot more, as you say, a lot more caught up in this healing than just simply getting better and going on his way.
Again, you may dismiss this as just the ponderings of a weak mind, but here we go. So I'm just taking the question on face value, why Jesus with that, and we've already established Jesus is defining salvation differently from what the man understands it to be, right? And that salvation is in terms of healing and rather than the forensic verdict that we're used to. But be that as may, we know that all through the Gospels, Jesus is trying to refine what salvation is, knowing full well that the church, after the resurrection, will be coming back to these events in order to better understand what it means to live in this salvation while dealing with sin, death, and the power of the devil. So I think somewhere in that question is Jesus saying, after all this frustration, do you still desire to be healed? Is that fire of hope still alive in you? And all right, and so this will later. Later, I'm going to ask. Well, I can ask it now, but I'm interested in if that's the case. If Jesus' salvation requires of us. Now, I know that we're not supposed to use the word requires, but I think Jesus' salvation came to this man at the right time. The man might have thought this could have happened 38 years earlier, but Jesus is coming to this man having this amount of frustration. And the church, one of the church's tasks is to be the place where people can continue to desire a salvation that they are not experiencing. Now, I know that's wrong because of course salvation is the absolution, but the actual experience of salvation that this man in the healing is oftentimes a desire that goes unfulfilled. Do you feel that that's, even if it's not a part of this text, do you think that's true?
I think so, especially, yeah, because we have our rote absolutions, in a sense, every Sunday, but the actual healing might not even, you know, it might happen, you might experience it at one point in life, you know, whatever healing that might be, you know, a physical healing, a psychological healing, you know, whatever damage has been done by sin. You might experience that healing now in time, or it might not be until eternity, but it you don't see it. It's not instantaneous every time you or I speak the absolution on Sunday morning.
Yeah, would that it would be. But so for me, reading this text, I wanted to become that man. I want to know if I am dealing with that long, and I don't have 38 years left on this earth, so it's not going to be that long. But I want to be able to, if the desire for healing it has to go on for a long time, if my frustration goes on for a long time, I would like to know that the church has the resources to allow me to wait. You know, the word is patience, but I'm just wondering, What in the church is there that helps a person in this situation where you hear the proclamation of salvation, but you would like to experience the existential truth of it, and that's a heartbreaking desire, and so that's what I'm hoping this text tells me. What can I count on? Can I have the hope that if healing is delayed, if that hope continues to carry on? You know, like when Jesus healed Lazarus, his sister said, what was this delay about? That seems to be a common query. Why did you have to wait this long? If you had been here earlier, we wouldn't be suffering like this. And right. And I think that's all intended in that question. Now, you may think that that's reading way too much into it.
So, no, even if it's reading into it, it's asking a question that needs to be asked, particularly the question of how is the church a place that makes room for that desire, for that hope, even if it's long, long delayed, even if it's, you know, even if they're suffering long waiting for it to be healed.
We do know that Jesus understands what's going on, and he is shaping individual Christians. He's leaving behind the story of salvation that he knows that the church's lifeblood will be continually going back to these readings and squeezing out the life that's there. And he's doing it to form the church into a certain kind of community in which at the heart is the promise of salvation. And that promise sustains us even when the promise seems to be distant. Or, you know, as Luther talked about, God being completely absent. Can the hope continue when God has, he uses the word absconded, had lost? Okay, ready for part two. Yeah, part two sounds like this is organized. It's not. All right, it happened at the Sheep Gate at a pool called Bethesda. That's not unimportant. John doesn't record unimportant things. Now, so what do we know about the Sheep Gate? It was the gate that, just on the other side, the gate was where the sacrificial lambs who were kept on one side of the wall well, the gate was open and they were led to the sacrifice, right? From the sheep markets, which will be very important in the cleansing of the temple, and at that into the temple where they are sacrificed. Now, so what we have here is that Jesus is at the very place where the whole sacrificial system is going on. We know that Jesus is going to completely destroy the old sacrificial system. I don't know if destroy is the right word. I think maybe complete what the sacrificial system was desiring, right?
Right.
Right. So there, and as I said, we know from the cleansing of the temple that the people kept the ceremony, but they got the wrong point about, they didn't understand what was going on. So somehow in this healing, Jesus is talking, is focusing on how he is going to be the sacrifice, which is another way of understanding the good news, that he becomes both the Lamb of God and he is the priest that sacrificed. So, and somehow the miracle, the healing in the midst, in the very center of that whole sacrificial system is I think Jesus is alerting to us that he is changing everything. Now, what is he changing? Right? Why isn't the man healed? He explains it to him.
Yes, because he can't get down to the water in time. Everyone else beats him there.
What kind of God sets up a system of cutthroat competition like this? I mean, one person gets the prize, right? Everybody else has to spend the rest of their time preparing for an event that's just going to leave them crushed. So Jesus, I think, is saying this whole idea of salvation as competitive, as righteousness, as comparative to somebody else, he's going to blow it all. He says real salvation is not you getting down to the water. It's the Savior coming to you.
Right.
Now, John doesn't judge the whole thing. I think there's an implicit judgment that if this is salvation, then of course the Pharisees and scribes and Jewish leaders are right to use that competition in order to control people. That's what the whole sacrificial system had become, right? We will be the gatekeepers as to who gets this and who doesn't. And all the worst aspects of the church that when the church gains a little bit of power, it seems to want to use that power in order to not impart salvation, but to control people.
Well, that's not something I would have drawn out of that text initially.
But can you say definitively, Jesus is offering an alternative salvation to this man? It's
yes.
Not getting into the water. He's coming to him.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's, and especially, you know, John's gospel talks about Jesus being, you know, his announcement during the water ceremony. During which festival is that? Whoever comes to me will find rivers of living water. So, you know, I think that fits well with this too, right? That he is, the water that comes to those who are sick and thirsting, and it's not us going to him.
So here's why I like about that is that we think, oh, that's good news. I don't have to do anything. When Jesus asked a question, he recognized that that's not good news. What you have to do is trust me that I know what I'm doing, which is the hardest thing in the world to do. Right. Everybody else would like an alternative salvation when we at least, you know, we don't really have to totally trust God to come in and do, you know, to be merciful. We can kind of hedge our bets and we can contribute something. But Jesus is making it quite clear. If you want to know the difficulty of this salvation, it means waiting 38 years for an event that you have desired to take place. And the only reason it happens is because the sacrificial system that you had counted on proved to be not what you thought it was. And the new sacrificial system that the Hebrews says when Jesus, with his once and for all sacrifice, completely destroyed all the sacrificial distortion that had taken place. So I think here, in a word, very quickly, Jesus is helping us understand what mercy is. When we say Kyrie eleison, when we say Lord have mercy, it is a severe mercy, as C.S. Lewis said. It is of mercy that may even look like not mercy at all. And as you know, when we get to the crucifixion, God's love doesn't look like love. It doesn't look like life. It looks like death itself. And so I think Jesus is constantly asking us, do you still desire this healing? Can you still see that this is the way to healing? And then, of course, I just love the fact that the healing is not done with a lot of hoopla and ceremony. It's just Jesus saying, all right, you desire it? Take up your bed and walk. And immediately the man was healed. Jesus circumvented the whole sacrificial system, and he gives the man the life that he's always desired to get up and walk, to become a participant in this life.
All right. What do you have to say about the other readings?
Yeah. So having defined the good news, the psalm makes it quite clear that everything turns on God being gracious, right? The psalm pleads that God be gracious, that God bless us, that God make his face shine upon us. That's another way of saying that God be among us, that God be truly present. And that's what Jesus is saying. The incarnation is changing the way that we understand salvation. And the psalm then says that when those conditions prevail, when God is among us, then the one sign of that is not that people are healed, but that people praise, that people have joy, that people are glad. What do you think of that?
So is the joy contingent on the healing?
What do you think?
Or I want to say no, it's contingent. It depends on his presence.
Okay. I think it's both.
Okay.
That somehow his presence is the very thing that we talked about earlier, the thing that allows us to have the patience, that the healing is real, even when it's delayed. That's what I want when, I'm approaching a big major surgery. It's going to be very painful, and I'm going to milk it for all it's worth. But the one thing I want to know is that in this healing, which is going to be frustrating and painful, there will be an abiding patience, you know? So I'm not a scourge to the people around me, that that there is this kind of recognition that the pain is worthwhile because the benefits are coming, even though they seem distant and even unreal. So, and here's the confidence of the psalm when it says, let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you judge and guide. That's the kind of thing I would desire, to be with that throng of people who, even in the thick of frustrating circumstances, can sing for joy and be glad. And of course, you know, we've talked about it. That's such a heavy, a hard task. That's why the church has to schedule its praise and script it. It first gives us the language, and then trust the fact that in our experience, that language will become increasingly real. And I have to say, you probably are much better at this. It's taken 70 years for me to understand that whole logic, that you get the language first and then you grow into it. I've always wanted the salvation to be much more obvious. Right.
Yeah.
And rather than a promise. And that is a salvation. It's just not Jesus' salvation.
What you experience is what most people experience, the slowness of the realization, right? It's a reality, but it's not fully realized. It's being, you know, in fits and spurts, it's being revealed to us.
Yeah. And here's how it was revealed every Sunday in my church, at the communion rail. The children come up to the communion rail, right? And when they come down from the communion rail, they go up reverently, but when they come down, all the kids break into a sprint down the aisle, knowing that church is almost over.
Yep.
Right? So for all that we have said about this place of joy and presence, if we're to have the faith like a child, we want something other than church. We want the actual healing. We want the actual life. And so every time I see those children, I say, bless your hearts. If I could still run, that's how I would be saying, church is fine. It is a hospital, but I want to get out of the hospital, right? It's a school, but I want to get out of the school. That Jesus is asking the man, do you still desire healing? I want the desire to be so desirous that you just can't wait for its fulfillment. And that's what you get in Acts, where Paul is just amazed at the way that God is keeping his promise to take this gospel to the whole world, where a man from Macedonia is in a vision urging him. Now, Paul is a very good thinker. We know he's a very good thinker. I'm not sure that he was so impressed by visions. But in this case, the vision was compelling, that a man in Macedonia was asking for help. And Paul must have seen this as somewhat of a miraculous thing, that anybody in Macedonia would be interested in him being there. And so Paul is recognizing that God is at work in places that we have no idea, that he is present in places that no one has mapped out or determined. So, and the man is saying, we're going to answer that question that was asked. Yes, we want to be healed, and we see that the word that you have is that healing, right? So already in the church, the people are saying, maybe it's not the physical healing, but the teaching that comes with it. It's urging Paul to come there and give what he gives. Just Paul talks. And so he sees that the expanse of the kingdom is going to this Roman colony in Macedonia. And Paul, ironically, is saying, here we're used to, complaining about Rome being the whore of Babylon and all that. But, the Pax Romana, these roads and this peace is allowing, Paul recognized, freedom to go to all of these various places. So in this sense, that yes, Rome was a scourge, but it wasn't only a scourge. And Paul, you get that, Paul saying, give thanks in all circumstances. And I think that that's why this is so brilliant, why Acts records it, that even in the midst of this, salvation is moving. What do you think?
I think that's spot on, because then what you have is you have people like Lydia who have a desire, and how does that desire manifest itself in paying attention, right? And of course, that paying attention is even the predecessor to being baptized, to be attentive to the word. It's one thing for the word to have all of the avenues to go out into the world, but finally that the Lord manifests that desire or pushes that desire forward into being attentive to that word. That of course is the key. That's part of the satisfaction of the desire, I would say.
It is, and I have that in boldface, because I think if I were preaching on the Acts passage, I would start with that mm-hmm. she paid attention to what Paul said. That's the miracle. We kind of like to think that, every time we open up our mouths, golden drops of wisdom are being sapped up by people. But the fact is that if one person pays attention, it's almost miraculous.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Okay. And so she pays attention and then desires to be baptized. And all along, Paul is amazed at how God is keeping his promises that this gospel would extend to the whole world. But it would happen just in very small ways. Paul making a dangerous trip. I think it's a dangerous trip to Macedonia. Even if it's not, Paul making the trip there, it's dangerous as that he's an outlaw. Or this woman who is a seller of purple goods. She's got a business to worry about, and now she's hanging around with suspicious people, and even publicly saying, come to my house and stay. All of these small signs are big miracles, I think, in Paul's mind. And then, of course, Revelation then says, here's what it looks like on the far side, where all of the various things come together. Seven bowls, seven angels, seven. plagues, all these sevens, right? The variability coming together into the unity that has been promised, and it's a remarkable unity. Now, I told you that I really loved that the kids at communion, when they recognize that the service is almost over, can't inhibit their glee. They break into a sprint to try to get out. And lo and behold, what do you think is not found in the final consummation in heaven? There is no temple. And all the children screamed, amen. No temple is necessary anymore. That is what we desire, that salvation is a real thing, no longer mediated through the church. And what we want is what takes its place, the things that are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. We desire a life that has been withheld from us, that we are all, the infirm and paralytics and the blind gathered around our little tiny false salvations. We are desiring that somehow the real salvation will come to us.
Thank you, David and Ethan, and thank you for listening. All the podcasts from this series, Worth Doing Badly, are available from our website, LutheranRadio.co.uk. Try our app. Download it for free from Google Play or the App Store. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other program on our schedule, send me an email to manager@LutheranRadio.co.uk. I am your host, Jamie Krieger, and I will be back next week with David and Ethan. Thank you again for listening, and stay on for more here on Lutheran Radio UK.